done.
We have more to do. Why in the world should someone in a modern day America be allowed to be fired or have their employment in any way discriminated against because of their sexual orientation? They shouldn't be. We are calling for fairness. And so I hope we can get this passed. And I feel comfortable we can do that with Cory Booker, who will be here tomorrow. We feel we're up to 55 Democrats. Every one of them, every one of my Democrats support this legislation. Two that didn't came out today, they support it. I'm proud of both of them. And so I think without a lot of question, we're going to get at least five Republicans to pass this, send it to the House. If the House, again, has any sense, and I hope they do, that they'll pick this up and pass it.
All right. Hey, how you doing? It's the Rebecca Juro Show, and thanks for tuning in. It is Halloween. Yeah. So, being Halloween, we've had kids coming to the door all night. It's been a little kind of cold and rainy. We didn't get a lot of kids this year. It's so funny, you know. Some years, when the weather is nice, we run out of candy in an hour. Because, you know, we go to the store, we go to a local drugstore and buy cheap Halloween candy, you know, little mini packages of stuff, and, you know, and we hand them out. When they're gone, you know. So usually we buy a few packages of stuff, and some years, I mean, we're out of candy in an hour. Other years, like now, it's like you can't even go out in the street and give the stuff away. I mean, it's unbelievable. We had like maybe five or six groups of trick-or-treaters today. Mm-hmm. And that's it. I mean, I'm so surprised. I really am. You know, I guess it's like there's a little bit, it's a little rainy, just a little, and like families are like, yeah, you're not going out because, you know, mommy or daddy has decided you're not going out. I guess. But in any case, thanks for tuning in. Thanks. Now we've got some slightly more important stuff to cover than Halloween, as important as candy is. There's some other stuff that we have to talk about. And the big answer is, okay, ENDA. You heard it at the top. You heard it at the top is on the opening. Harry Reid sits down with Rachel Maddow for, I would add, the first time in the history of her show, even though she's had him and interviewed him several times over the course of her show, but the first time she's ever talked about ENDA. Now, it's not, I should say, and I want to point out, because I want to be fair, I've bashed Rachel in the past for not covering ENDA. I think it was just a week ago, or maybe a week and a half ago, something like that. She did ask one of her guests about ENDA. Briefly, it was a leading question. She did a segment on the show last night I was very impressed with. There was one thing, and I've heard other people notice this, and it's not the first time. She seems to have a problem with the term gender identity. I don't know why this is. I know we have another clip, don't we, Mr. Mike, of her that little gaffe there?
Well, yes, and let's roll it right now. Yes, he said. Let's let's roll it right now. Sure, he said a third time. Let's roll it right now.
You announced this week that you would, before the end of this work period, so before Thanksgiving, you'd bring the Employment Non-Discrimination Act to the floor, which would be landmark gay rights legislation. It has languished for more than a decade, I think. It was big
since
news.
Since 1997.
And you were an early supporter of it in the 90s.
One of the things I look back on with part of my education here in the Congress, a person came to me from L.A. He was a big shot in the human rights campaign. We met in my office. He said, you know, you're a moderate. He said, if you would join as a sponsor of ENDA, we could pass that. I said, you think so? He said, yeah, because if you agree to sponsor it, I will get other people to join. And so I did, and we did. We got lots of sponsors. We brought that to the floor in 1997, and it failed by one vote.
Wow.
So I've been a supporter of this for a long time. And as I look back at my education, we've done some really important things for fairness in our country. I went to a play this Saturday at the Ford Theater. It was so good. It's called The Laramie Project. It's played all around the country. And it's the story of a boy, small gay man, Laramie, Wyoming, who is terribly tortured because of his sexual identity. Because of his sacrifice, he was murdered. We were able to pass the Hate Crimes Act. That's part of my education.
Wow. You know, I have to tell you, I think it's great to hear Senator Reid talking like this. I mean, frankly, I've been calling for him to be talking like this for a long time. So I'm not going to be the one. I mean, I've had plenty of complaints about the way Harry Reid has done his job.
Mm-hmm.
But I am not going to complain about this. I'm not going to bash the guy for finally doing what we've been asking him to do for a long time.
But I listened to this whole interview, 25 minutes worth, great interview. But neither of them say the word gender ever during this entire interview.
No, not at all. And I would encourage people, if you have a chance, go to Mattoblog. I mean, just put Mattoblog into Google. It'll come up, believe me. Go there. They have the entire 23 minutes interview, Matto interviewing Harry Reid. Now, they cover a lot of stuff. Not just Enda, but also a lot of other stuff. So you'll get a lot of that. But yeah, neither one of them say gender identity. Neither one of them use the T word. Harry Reid at one point stumbles over LGBT.
Oh, yeah.
Can't even manage that. And, you know, I have to wonder. I mean, because we've seen this in the past with Matto. I have to wonder, I mean, does she have an issue with trans people? I really want to know. I mean, I'm not saying that as a bash. I'm not saying it as a dig. I really want to know. I mean, it seems like she has this mental block that prevents her from, like, discussing us directly. I mean, she'll discuss us apparently indirectly, but she can't seem to get the word transgender or gender identity or anything that directly relates to us never seems to quite properly make it out of her mouth. I mean, I don't understand what the problem is, especially with somebody like Matto, because she's so, you know, she always has her shit together. You know, she's always the one who has all her facts in order, gets everything straight, or always, you know, always the one you can depend on to get the straight poop. And she, I question why she cannot get the concept of gender identity, especially, you know, you
would
think.
Wait a minute. Didn't she used to say that she felt gender variant and that her presentation made other people perhaps feel that she was gender variant?
I mean, I wish Rachel Maddow would make the connection, you know, that when somebody, you know, throws bigotry at her by calling her a man, which, you know, you see these right-wingers do all the time.
Sure.
Every time that they're doing that, they're not questioning her sexuality. They're questioning her gender presentation.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish fucking Rachel Maddow, who is so intelligent, this Rhodes Scholar, who is a doctorate, who is among the most brilliant people on the in the media right now. What does it say that somebody that smart can't make that basic connection? That they're not bashing you because you're gay, Rachel. They're bashing you because you're gender variant. Because you wear your hair short and there's pictures of you all over the internet and ties and men's shirts. And because you don't have the same feminine presentation as most of your female colleagues at MSNBC and NBC and every other BC that there is. You know, I mean, when are you going to make that connection, Rachel? That when somebody bashes transgender people, whether it's directly or indirectly, they're bashing you too. When are you going to get that? I mean, it amazes me that somebody that brilliant is yet to make that basic a connection. And I think that's part of the problem. I mean, if our media is this ignorant, what does that say about our country? What does that say about our politicians? Why? I mean, It's because our media is so ignorant. I mean, I'm going to draw a connection for you right here. Ignorant media equals no Senate vote on ENDA in 17 fucking years. Okay? Because our media can't be bothered to hold politicians accountable. Because, you know, I mean, after all, then, you know, they might not get those, you know, very valuable interviews with Reid and Pelosi and Obama. And, you know, they're more, they seem like, you know, MSNBC and NBC and all these major media networks seem more interested in keeping powerful Democrats happy. So they'll keep scheduling interviews with them than with actually, you know, like leading and, you know, doing things that they said that they would do when they ran for office, when they said, we're all about serving you and we're your representatives in Washington. Now all that shit's out the window, and it's like, well, what's best for me? You know? And you know what? I wish I didn't have to talk like that. Okay? And I hope that that's changing. I hope that this is a sign with Harry Reid coming out in favor of ENDA. Okay, I hope this is a sign that that's finally changing. But you know what? I'll be honest with you. I don't believe it. I don't trust it. I don't trust Harry Reid. I don't trust Nancy Pelosi. I don't trust Barack Obama. I don't trust any of these people. Because I used to. And then 2009 came, and I saw what the 111th Congress did. And I realized what an idiot I was to trust any of these people to follow through on promises that they make when they want your money and your votes. So, you know what? I hope Harry Reid shows me and shows you that things are changing. But you know what? I don't believe it. I still don't believe it. I think that they're, you know, Harry Reid, according to all reports, has scheduled a vote for Monday. For cloture. And you know what? People are not going to want to hear this, but I'll tell you what I think. I think we're going to get a cloture vote. I think it has at least a 50-50 chance of failing. Because I think what will happen is a lot of those Republicans who promised to vote for this, I think McConnell will bring down the hammer and those votes will disappear. And then we will not have cloture, and it'll be another 17 years before these people remember we exist, because that's what they do. Then they'll turn around and say, hey, we brought it up for a vote. Oh, so sorry it didn't pass, and, you know, nobody made any effort once it was done, but, you know, we brought it up, so money, money, money. Yeah, we lifted a finger, so money, 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 and money, money. Oh, and also, could you send us some more money? Yeah. Because, well, we don't know what we're going to do with it. We certainly have no inclination to help you, but money, 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 send us money, 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 because money, and also money, you know, because that's what these people, I mean, it's all these people seem to be caring about. Yeah. You know, I so you'll forgive me for being cynical about this, but I'm cynical about this. I think what we're seeing now is political theater. I think that the Democrats are putting there's an election coming up that the Democrats want to win. They're putting on a show of, you know. They're basically what they're, you know, look at how progressive we are. I mean, I think that's what this is all about. I really do. And then I think once that's over, you know, and we're in 2015, they already got our money and our votes, and it's going to be business as usual again. That's what I believe. Because I don't believe, I don't believe that Harry Reid really gives a shit whether any of us live or die. I think he cares about making sure that, as he put it on in his interview, that his Democrats get reelected. That's what he cares about. And if it means, well, throwing a few working class LGBT people under the bus again, well, you know, as long as it gets his Democrats elected, he's okay with that. I mean, after all, that's exactly what he did in 2009. Why should now be any different? Again, this is an exercise. It is political theater. I don't think anybody in Washington, D.C. right now who has their head screwed on straight honestly believes that this has any chance whatsoever of making it through the House. And so this is as credible as the Human Rights Campaign was and as Barney Frank was when they supported a non-inclusive ENDA, saying, oh, this will help move the ball forward. Well, now we know that, of course, it did no such thing. You know, and, Democrats went along with it. Why not? Because that was the easy way to do it. And then they come back to us and say, oh, yeah, well, we fucked you over in 2007. And, well, we did it again in 2009. Oh, but you can trust us this time. Really, you can. You know what? I'm sorry. I say, you want me to trust you this time? You got to prove it. I trust nothing that comes out of your mouth. You want me to believe you are supporting something that we can count on you for a vote and for leadership? You're going to have to prove it. You had your chance to get the benefit of the doubt, and we saw what you did with it. You waited until you got all our money and all our votes, and then you just went back to money pandering as usual. Why on earth should we trust you now? I mean, I would like to trust. I would like to believe. But I don't. Because I have no reason to. Harry Reid making promises is not any reason for me to trust. Harry Reid actually bringing the bill up and getting it passed, that will impress me. Will it make me trust him? No, not really. Because we know that Democrats, you know, as usual, will just, you know, the minute we become inconvenient for them, they'll forget all about us again, just like they always do. Just like they did last year. When everybody was busy singing Kumbaya, marriage, 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 Kumbaya, and not fucking one of those people bothered to have the word jobs escape their mouth, or at least not jobs for us anyway. So you'll forgive me if I remain skeptical. I want this to be true. I want this to result in a passage, at least pass the Senate. I would like to see that. But do I believe that it will happen? No. Do I believe that it's done honestly because people are trying to pass this bill and not just political theater to try and get people to think positively of Democrats? No. And if you think I'm wrong, then I ask you, call me right now. Call into the show and answer this question for me. You believe in Barack Obama, in Nancy Pelosi, in all these other folks who say, oh, yeah, yeah, you can trust us. I want you to call me, 928-277-4921. Tell me, answer me one question. Why should we trust these people now? Why should we trust them? 928-277-4921. Give us a call. Because I'll tell you, I still have yet to see a single credible reason. I mean, talking? Democrats are great at talking. They have no trouble talking. Problem where Democrats run into trouble is doing. That's where we never wind up seeing any progress. Because we don't have the cash like the rich insider gays in D.C. do. So we don't get the attention. And they're going to go through this. It will be dead on arrival in the House. And then we'll be another 17 years before they remember we exist again. And Harry Reid probably figures, what the fuck do I care? I'll be dead by then. Okay? I mean, that's really what it's about, is they're just trying to pawn this off and pawn this off and pawn this off, and eventually they'll retire and they'll be somebody else's problem. Yeah, who cares if those people have to wait another 20 years? Not my problem, right? I got an election to worry about. I mean, seriously. You know? And of course, you know, I have to say that I am hopeful with the inauguration, but that's the wrong word. For Cory Booker joined the Senate today, sworn in. He was sworn in as a member of the Senate today. Okay, guys like Cory Booker entering the Senate give me hope.
Hello. Did we lose you?
Hello.
Well, hi, Mrs. Giro. This is Mike Scott, Becky's producer.
Hi.
Hello there.
You're on.
I'm on. My connection just dropped dead. Like, all of a sudden, I realized I was getting that sound. Do-do-do-do-do, you know, that Skype sound. That And I'm like, I was right in the middle of something, and I'm like, oh, shit. So I'm now, and I realized it was me because
well, we
I checked
had it
my
here
thing.
Too. Well, all right. Let's go into our break and see if we can get that connection back. I think we've done your show over the telephone only one other time, and it was like 7 years ago. I have a distant memory of that, and we can do a show that way. So if we had to, it would be all right, but I hate to hog your phone.
If we must, then we'll do that.
Sure.
Right now it's taking forever to shut down. But as soon as I am back up, I will get in touch with you by Skype. I guess, I don't know, throw on some music for a few minutes. Oh, let's see. Oh, is it going through its little cycle here? let me do this. I
want to ask you a question. After Lou Reed passed the other day, were mentioning on, you were alluding to a story of how you got to a certain place in your life by listening to that song, and that was an important touchstone for you.
Yes, it was. All right. Well, if you're going to play Lou Reed in the break, maybe I'll come back with that.
That might be kind of interesting to hear. So, all right, folks, let's go ahead and we'll invite the colored girls to sing. Doobie doobie doo.
All right. I'll be back with you in a few minutes.
All right. Here's Lou. Hello, it's the Rebecca Giro Show, but strangely, I'm not Rebecca Giro, but she is.
I am.
You're back.
I am back.
I'm happy.
Oh, my goodness. Apparently my internet connection just hiccuped while we were on the air there. And
you know,
unfortunately,
there are lots of strange things on Halloween. That could be one of them.
It could be. It happens. It happens.
Mm.
Anyway, so let's see. Where were we now? I'm still waiting for my browser to come back.
How about a story?
How about a story?
How about a story, Auntie Rebecca? Hmm.
Yes. You just heard Lou Reed, Walk on the Wild Side. And I was telling a story. Of course, those in case you don't know, in case you don't follow these things, Lou Reed, who, of course, is the guy who led the Velvet Underground, had an amazing solo career afterwards, passed away this week at the age of 71. He was the guy who wrote that song and sang that song. And it was, if you listen to the song, of course, about in those days they called them drag queens, and now we would probably refer to them as trans women. And that was really the first song that I ever heard as a young person where I started to it introduced me to the concept of the idea that just because you were born male you didn't necessarily have to live as a man. I mean, and that for me, at that age, which was really young, I'm probably 14 or 15 years old, you know, it really, it helped me understand that and understood that there are people who do this. This is not an unheard of thing, that there are people who are born male and who live as women or in a female mode, if for lack of a better, more accurate term. And so that song was I would say, important in my formative years. The other song like that that was I kind of really brought it home for me was Lola by the Kinks, which was, of course, sure, very popular during the 70s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just introduced me, both of those songs introduced me to the concept that, yeah,
Oh, what's up? What's happening?
Oh, I apologize. That was a sudden window, browser window, that opened on my browser and started playing an ad. And I had to figure out very quickly which page was playing it and get rid of it. Because, you know, we make sure we stop all these things and prevent that so that when we go on the air, we don't have those kind of problems. But, of course, when you're rebooting your computer from a crash and, you know, unfortunately, some of those things don't quite get shut down the way they're supposed to. So I apologize. That didn't go out over the air, did it?
No, everything was as normal as it's going to get during this show.
Okay. No, it just kind of freaked me out.
By the way, I'm sending you a link to that story that we talked about earlier in the week from Dangerous Minds, which is a really wonderful blog, one of my favorite blogs. And it's all about Lou Reed's transsexual or transgender or perhaps transvestite girlfriend. And it's quite interesting, actually. There is a lot behind Lou's music, not just that one song.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. He had a girlfriend who was, again, one of these people who we would probably call a trans woman in today. In those days, it was drag queen or something. And it was, let's see. Oh, I think I've read this before. Woman's name was Rachel.
Fascinating story.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, because this is a person who performed with him on stage, but was a person of clearly mixed gender, at least according to the photos that I've seen, who are feminine but not necessarily female. And of course, it's also worth noting that Lou was, underwent electroshock therapy, because, his parents forced him to undergo to prevent him from being, bisexual.
Mm-hmm. Kill Your Sons, a song he wrote about that.
Exactly. And so, yeah, Lou Reed was a significant influence for me, although I didn't really understand that until many years later. He was a very formative figure. And for those of us of a certain age, like myself, I think that you know, he was a figure before the punks, before people like Jane County, before Bowie, before all these artists that came in the 70s and into the 80s that played with gender and those. He was there. I mean, he was the original punk, really. I mean,
when I think that Walk on the Wild Side was released 40 years ago, that's an incredibly long time. And consider the actual words, the lyrics in that song are so provocative and so, you know, really evoke images of things that middle America would never have dreamed of at that time.
Absolutely. And these were real people that he was writing about. Holly was Holly Woodlawn.
From the Warhol camp, yeah. All the Warhol stuff going on.
Right. Candy Darling, also another one from that crowd.
Joe D'Alessandro of the Amazing Ass for Us Gay Guys.
Right.
Joe was amazing.
Never once
gave it away.
Everybody had to pay and pay. You know, I mean, there was really a humanity and a realness to Lou Reed and his music that I think I wish we had more of, of straight people, or I don't know if you could call Lou Reed straight, but non-trans people, let's put it that way, who write realistically and truthfully about our community, which is something I don't think that we've seen really since his time. Lou Reed was a very significant figure for me. So was Bowie. I remember during the 70s, there was this period when Bowie went through where he was cross-dressing. And that was a big deal for me because, again, it brought home the idea, people do this. People do this. And their lives continue. Because there was a period where I believed, seriously, that if I came out, my life would end. My parents would desert me, my friends would desert me, everybody would, and I believe that. The reason I believe that was not, had nothing to do with my parents or my friends or the actual quality of those people, but with my own unreasoning fears based on the unknown. Because the truth is when you're a trans person and you're young and you've never met another trans person, you've never seen another trans person, you have no idea anything about what it is to be trans. You don't know. You have nothing to base your experience on. There is nobody else. There is nobody to go and say, how did this happen for you? Is it going to be okay? And so you had nothing but your own fears. And it's, I think that's a big reason why it took me to the age of 35 to come out. I really do. Because I just, and the funny thing was when I finally did come out, with one or two exceptions, pretty much, everybody stuck by me. I would say 97% of my fears were unfounded. Yes, I lost a couple of friends. But you know what? It's not the end of the world. I mean, it disappoints me. They were good friends. I am disappointed that they're no longer my friends. But I didn't lose. My family didn't turn their back. None of the other fears that I had really came true. And so, but at the time, when you're 16, 17, 18 years old, and you're finally coming to terms with things. At the time I was 18 years old, it was 1980. Ronald Reagan had just been or was about to be elected to the presidency.
Eek.
Yeah. It was not a good time. And I just, it scared the crap out of me. I mean, because I just didn't understand it. I knew what I wanted, but I had to answer all those other questions. Does this mean I have to date men now? I don't want to date men. I don't want to fuck men. I like girls, I had all these questions in my head that I know a lot of you must have had when you were considering the coming out process, but I had no resources. I had nowhere to go and ask these questions until the advent of the internet. And I finally got an internet connection and I could go and connect with other trans people and say, explain this. How did it work for you? I don't understand this. Explain it to me. I don't get it. And now these kids are growing up. They have all those resources. And so it's a much, much, much better world to come out as trans. But living as trans, well, if you're lucky enough to pass well, you're doing okay. You know, if you're not, well, then you may have a problem. You know, it was interesting. I was watching HuffPost Live today. There was a clip with Janet Mock and Lucas Silvera of The Clicks. And who else was it? A couple of trans guys who run a magazine. I forget their names. Forgive me. But they were talking about, you know, being visible, trans and visible in the media, which is great. But their whole conversation, you know, you look at this group of people, this group of trans people that they selected for this panel discussion, and you look across at them, and every single one of them, all five of them, if you put them in a group and in a room, and you let in a whole group of trans of non-trans people and had them intermix and mingle, nobody would ever notice that there was anything wrong. These people, without fail, were all passable, all pretty, all handsome. Not one of them was visibly transgender. And that, to me, is like you've missed the whole point of the conversation. I'm sorry, but you have. Okay, because it's not about when somebody as beautiful as Janet Mock gets on television. Okay, well, she's beautiful. Nobody's going to know that she's trans unless she tells them. Okay, she's not going to have problems. She will be treated like a lady wherever she goes. Lucas Silvera will be treated as a guy wherever he goes. Okay, the real issue, the real people, the people who need to be heard from, the people who needed to be in that group today, were not people who look like Janet Mock and Lucas Silvera. They're people who look like me and Mara Kiesling and other trans women, particularly women, because this is the most noticeable. Trans men generally are a lot more passable. It's just the way it is. It's not a disparagement or a discrimination in any way. It's simply a fact of medical life and the way hormones work and stuff like that. But that's what we need. We need to put the people who we need to put into the media are not the people who are perfect and beautiful. We need to put the people who are imperfect and not so beautiful. Because those are the people who are going to face the most discrimination. And that is why we are having, as we are, we're having such a hard time with the media. Because, you know, I mean, I think it's great when Janet Mock, because she's so well-spoken, she's such a good advocate, and she's so smart, and all that good stuff. And this is not, again, I mean, I love Janet Mock to death. She's been on the show, as you know. I think she's a wonderful person. I think she's an awesome advocate for our community. That has nothing to do with what I am talking about here. It has nothing to do with the quality of the people who they presented. It has to do with the fact that there were no visible transgender people in that group. Okay? Just like it would be wrong if you had an issue about discrimination based on race, and you only had people from other races who looked exactly like white people. I mean, that would make no sense either, would it? I mean, you know, do you know what I'm saying here? What's even worse is that nobody on that panel even made a mention of that. And as much as I think those are great people, I mean, you got two guys who are running a magazine. They also had a trans singer, Our Lady J, who's seemed to be a very nice person.
Sure, we've Janet had Mock on the show a couple of times.
Yeah, Lucas Silvera.
Yep, ditto.
But all these people, not one of them is going to have a problem being accepted in the genders that they present. And that is the whole issue. This it's not because of people like Janet Mock and Lucas Silvera that we need the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. It's because of people who look like me and Mara. I mean, you know, I love the Huffington Post. I write for the Huffington Post, but sometimes it's like, come on, people, get a fucking clue. I mean, do you really live? I mean, you know, you guys are based in New York. Don't you get downtown every now and then to see what the real people look like? I mean, and that's, I don't, again, I don't want this to be taken as a bashing of Janet Mock or Lucas Silvera or any of those folks. It absolutely is not. They are all wonderful people. They are all great examples of our community. But they don't tell the whole story because they can't. These are the beautiful people. The people who are experiencing the discrimination, the people who need to be in that media, the people who need that media time are not the beautiful people. They're the people who are not beautiful. They're the people who walk into a apply for a job and the interviewer can tell right away that this person was not born a woman. Those are the people that need that HuffPost Live time, that need to be on MSNBC. That need to be in The Advocate or in other major media. I mean, Janet Mock is great. But Janet Mock can only tell one side of the story. Because our side of the story is simply not her experience. And it's, again, it's not a denigration. It's not anything negative. It's simply Janet Mock is a beautiful woman. She can tell you what it's like to be a beautiful trans woman. She can't tell you what it's like to be a trans woman who, well, of course, I don't know what she's fully transitioned now. She may well have had some experiences before she was quite as beautiful as she is today. But, you know, the people who are being discriminated against today do not look like Janet Mock or Lucas Silvera or Our Lady J, all of whom are wonderful, gorgeous people. You know, and this is part of the problem. And so I don't know how much good having beautiful people on to talk about things that you know, to me, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like having a bunch of white people on to talk about discrimination against blacks. I mean, white-looking black people. In other words, people who are so light-skinned that you wouldn't know whether they were black unless they told you. You know, and don't get me wrong. Again, these are situations people are born in. I mean, it's not a denigration to say your skin color is lighter than this person. I mean, that's idiotic. Beyond idiotic. But it's also equally stupid to deny that there are two different realities here. There is a reality for people who look like Janet Mock and Lucas Silvera. And there is another very different reality for people who look like me and Mara Kiesling. Do you know what I'm saying? People who are visibly, detectably trans. It is a different life. And when you exclude those people from your discussion, you are only telling a small part of the picture. And that's, you know, again, I like the Huffington Post. I write for the Huffington Post. I know some of the people that work for them. They are great people. I love my editor, Noah Michelson. He's awesome. But, you know, Noah covers the Gay Voices vertical. In other words, the Gay Voices section over at HuffPost. So if you ever read that, that's his bailiwick. He appears on HuffPost Live, but he doesn't run HuffPost Live. I would wish that either Noah or somebody else at HuffPo who understands these issues a little better than clearly the producers of HuffPost Live do, would walk over to their studio and give them a little talking to. Because, you know what? This is bullshit. Okay? It's like having a room full of Miss America contestants and claiming that it represents all women. It doesn't make any sense. And anyone with half a brain knows it's bullshit. Well, if that's bullshit, so is this. Tell the whole story, HuffPo. Don't just tell the shiny bits. Tell the whole story, the real story. Don't be another MSNBC that only talks to the people who are wealthy enough, that can afford the advertising. I mean, all right, I'm over break at this point, and I'm going to go have a cigarette and calm down. And so in the meantime, while I'm doing that, we got great, we got another
candy.
Interesting, another sad story coming up on the other side. But right now, we have got something from one of my favorite ever movies, which was responsible, another key moment in my queer education as a young person. The first time I ever dressed up as a woman, even though it was done in a stage kind of situation, was when I played Columbia in the Rocky Horror Picture Show on stage when I was, I think I was 17, much skinnier than I am now. And our song is Science Fiction Double Feature, CN5 Gang.
Double feature picture show.
You won.
With your hands on your hips.
All right, we're back. It's the Rebecca Giroux Show. And, of course, that is the Time Warp. I love the Time Warp. I actually danced the Time Warp in little spangly outfit, and little top hat, and the whole nine yards. Yeah, I couldn't tap dance because I was incapable even then.
I loved little Nell.
But I actually did fit the suit. It was interesting. The reason I wound up getting that job when I was 17, we did this show where I, you know, very often, not always, depended on if all the people were there, but very often, Friday night at the local movie house, people would put on, you know, act out the movie. And one night, they had all the people there. I was a regular. I used to go all the time. I knew all these people. And one time, it was a boy who played Columbia and fit the suit and got sick. Couldn't perform that night. And they grabbed me literally out of the audience because, you know, like I said, I knew all these people. You know, we were friends. And said, we want you to do Columbia. I'm like, well, I've never done this. I don't know. He's like, don't worry about it. You don't have to dance. Oh, you know the words. You know the lines. You just go and act out the lines and you'll be fine. I'm like, but I can't tap dance. It's like, nobody gives a shit. Just do this. I'm like, so I put on this outfit. And it's a little, you know, just like you see with the little spangles and the sequins and the whole nine yards. And the little jacket and the whole top hat and the whole thing. And I come out on stage, and of course, needless to say, friends of mine are like in hysterics because, you know, I've never done this before. And I did it, you know, because I, like everybody else, I knew every line from the movie by heart, you know, even to this day. I'm listening to that music in the break, and I'm like, in my mind, I'm shouting things at the screen. But, you know, and so I did it, and I did my one little thing with my cute little short shorts and my little sequined outfit and the whole thing. And what was really funny was my friends were making fun of me afterwards. Oh, you look so cute. You were such a little cutie and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, yeah, well, whatever. I was like, oh, I was loving the shit out of it. I was having – I couldn't let myself have too much fun because, you know, I was 17. I couldn't let people know that I, you know, the deep, dark secret, which, of course, at that time was, in fact, a deep, dark secret. So I didn't feel like I could – I was comfortable – enjoying myself too much, you know, but at the same time, internally, I was like, I loved it. I mean, I spent the next week fantasizing, you know, and that was one of those times when I like, as I was telling the story with Lou Reed, where I was like, people do this. I could do this. I never found the courage when I was young enough, and I wish I had. I really do. I mean, I know. I mean, you know, I don't know about you guys, but if you read any of the histories, the stories of transgender people over time and how things were back in the day, I suggest two books I would recommend to anybody would be Stonewall by Martin Duberman, which talks about the community in New York at the time of Stonewall riots, and Transgender Warriors by Leslie Feinberg, which is goes way, way back. You know, and you know, in those days, you know, I mean, you see what they went through, and I was terrified. I still believed at that age that if I came out and started living as a girl or announced that I wanted to be a girl, I would wind up, my family would abandon me, my friends would abandon me, I would have no life, and that's what I believed. Yes, it was probably irrational. Looking back at it now, I think it was irrational because I should have had more faith in my parents and my friends and my family. But the truth is you just don't know. And there were too many of my own fears of what, you know, my fear of being made fun of. You know, I was in a very strange place at that time because I was getting into punk. And so I wanted to be a tough guy, and be, you know, because I figured that was going to cure me. You know, if I was tough enough and I wore black leather and I, you know, well, then everything would be okay. It would fix itself and, you know, stuff would magically go away. Well, needless to say, it didn't. You know, and years later, I found myself looking back and going, damn, if I had only taken that opportunity, or if I had only taken that opportunity, or if I had only had the courage to do something when I had, you know, there's so many regrets, you know, and so when you see a kid, you know, a young kid, starting to come to terms with it, and then having the support from the parents, from the family, from the school, from the community to say, this is who you are, we're going to line up behind you and support it, which is something that, you know, for most of us, especially, you know, those of us of an age, as we are wont to say when we reach the magic 5-0, you know, that we would never have seen, that we would have been singled out. Now, I should point out, I was already a special ed kid. Nobody knew what was going on with that poor, you know, that angry child. Well, you know, the truth is, if I'd come out back then, I wonder what my life would be like today. I really do. I wonder if I would have come out in the way that I did. I wonder if I would have tried to make an attempt to take my own life, which I did. I wonder if I would even have become an activist or a media person. Because if I had been living this life and had adapted and become a woman and lived as a woman from, let's say, 20 to 40 or 20 to 35, those 15 years, those 20 years that I wasted, if I had been more aggressive, if I had been more, you always have that what might have been conversation, you know, and so I know I there's a certain level of jealousy, I guess, that comes with you see these kids who have all these advantages that we never had. And you, on the one hand, you regret not having those advantages, and yet at the same time, you're glad that kids today don't have to go through the same level of repression, I guess is the best word for it, that you did when you were a kid. And so, all right, I'm going off on tangents here. And let's see, what else do we have to talk about now? Okay. Well, we've talked about Enda. Again, one of the concerns that I have with Enda, while we're too busy worrying about is it going to pass, is it not going to pass, and we've talked about this before, there's the religious exemption that is really generating a lot of controversy in the community. I know there are several organizations, including the National Center for Transgender Equality and the Human Rights Campaign, that are supporting the current exemption, which is so wide you could drive a fleet of trucks through it. See, I'm concerned about this because, you know what? We've seen this kind of thing before. When you make these kind of exemptions, we see it in the Massachusetts law. Well, when you make a law that has holes in it big enough to drive a fleet of trucks through, it shouldn't surprise you when somebody starts revving up those semis and trying to go for that hole. And I think that if we set the bar lower than it needs to be, then that's exactly what we're going to get. And I'm sorry, but I think we deserve better. I don't think it should be okay for any religiously affiliated organization, regardless of whether or not the job in question is a directly religious job, like a pastor or somebody who works in the church as a minister of some sort, or some, you know, or a teacher or whatever, and somebody who's teaching actual church doctrine, and somebody who's a janitor. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen, is they're going to be, teachers and janitors and people who have no religious responsibilities whatsoever, who are going to end up losing jobs because this ridiculously overbroad religious exemption is going to say, well, as long as you can say that you're somehow affiliated with a church, go ahead, discriminate away. I mean, I think that's really what we're talking about here. And what's even worse is it's a much wider exemption than that which is in the Civil Rights Act of 1964. So basically what you're doing is not only are you saying that we're going to allow churches to basically do pretty much anything they want in the name of God, including violating federal law, but what you're going to do is you're going to say, well, the standard for discrimination, if you're racial, ethnic, gender, in other words, gender being man, woman, gender, as opposed to gender identity, or any of these other things, well, there's a very strict standard for that. But if you're LGBT, well, then it's okay. It's perfectly okay to justify discrimination against you just because of that. I think that is an awful, horrible, disgusting, bigoted precedent to set. And you know what? I think these organizations, and I include Freedom to Work, and I include NCTE, and I include the Human Rights Campaign, and I include all these people who are currently supporting this religious exemption, I think should know better. This is a backdoor to discrimination, and they know it. You know, it took me a few weeks before I decided where I wanted to come down on this. Because on the one hand, I said I bought into a lot of the stuff that like people like Tico Almeida are saying and other people who were saying, well, you know, the whole important point is for the bill to pass, so we'll do what we have to do to get the bill passed and we'll worry about that later. I say bullshit. Because number one, we know this bill ain't becoming law this session. I mean, what do you think, we're stupid? Come on. We know the House is never going to take this up. Okay? No matter what lies Nancy Pelosi is trying to float now, trying to make excuses, we both know that even if there was an opportunity, she will cave just like she always does, just like she did last time and the time before that, the time before that. So please, nobody quote Nancy Pelosi to me and try and, God, I don't know who I trust less, Republicans or Nancy Pelosi, the person who's supposed to be on our side. The woman who, oh yeah, by the way, happens to come from the city with the largest transgender population in the fucking country? The city that's considered the gay mecca of the United States? I mean, seriously. Seriously. Why would anyone believe a word this woman says? I mean, think about this, okay? Back in 2009, she went to Netroots Nation and she said, well, you know, we went for Don't Ask, Don't Tell and the hate crimes bill because that's what the community told us that they wanted. I tried to check that out, fact check it. No other organization or activist seems to be on board with this. So this community that Nancy Pelosi speaks of, it could only be from one source because there was only one organization in 2009 that was going to every single Pride event with camouflage-covered booths going, don't ask, don't tell, don't ask, don't tell, while everyone else was talking about real issues like ENDA, you know, which are, well, I shouldn't say real issues, but far more wide-ranging and impacting issues like ENDA. Because, again, I will say, go ahead, ask those soldiers if they would say, who would you rather protect first, yourselves or the families you leave behind when you go to war? I think we all know what those soldiers would say, because those soldiers are heroes. Those soldiers put themselves on the line for others. They're not bigoted cowards like the people in Congress that they supposedly are their bosses. Or the guy who's supposedly their commander-in-chief. These guys are real heroes. And so they would say, you know what, put my rights on the side, make sure my family is covered first. You know that's what they would say. But of course, you know, Nancy Pelosi says, no, that's what the community said they wanted. Well, the only organization that was in line with what Nancy Pelosi was claiming the community wanted was the Human Rights Campaign. Only one. And that's not a bash of HRC. It's simply a fact. I was there. I saw it with my own eyes. Then she comes back to Netroots Nation this year in July. I was sitting in the audience. She repeated the same lie again. I mean, this is what you want us to trust? Seriously? This is the kind of leadership you want us to believe in? From a woman who can't even stand up for her own constituents? I mean, I'm sorry, but I just don't buy it. I just don't buy it. I don't see how Nancy Pelosi is credible on our issues. I have trouble seeing how Harry Reid is credible. I mean, don't forget, okay? Yes, he has promised to vote on Monday, and I hope he does it. I hope there's some magical excuse of some big shiny that gets in the way, doesn't make this go away, although I'm still not convinced that it will, because that's exactly what happened last time. It was end to end, jobs, jamarriage, to quote, to sort of semi-quote Rachel Maddow. It's jobs, jamarriage. The minute the election was over, it went from jobs to marriage. So we know what these people do. I mean, it isn't like we're saying, well, we're not sure. We are sure. We saw it. We saw exactly what they do. When they have everything that they say they need, they say, okay, we're done with you. Now we're going to go do what we want because we got what we needed from you. We have seen it with our own eyes. And I'm sorry, but I have a hard time trusting people who do things like that. How about you? I mean, let's talk about the real world here. Are you a boss? Well, let's say you hire somebody and somebody makes you a promise and says, okay, we need you to get this job done. And you say, okay, I got this job. I'm going to get this job done. And then they come back later and you haven't done it. You're the boss. What do? Do you say, oh, that's okay, keep trying? Or do you say, you know what? I'm firing you and I'm going to replace you with somebody who will do the job that you said you would do in the first place. Ugh. All right. It is time for yet another Lou Reed themed break. We have got Perfect Day. Good stuff. More drug music from Lou Reed. And we'll be back with Mo and Joe. I'll see you in a couple.
This is a story of those in the twilight time. Once human, now monsters. Monsters to be pitied. Monsters to be despised from the innermost depths of the world.
Well, I'll hire me a nurse to tote my purse and I'll keep it full of beer.
Yeah, and I'll have a girl to drive my truck and one to tease my hair.
We can still go fishing, wear our old blue jeans. When it comes to showtime, we'll be country queens. Where's Stress?
That's hideous. Why are we playing that?
Oh, my God.
Mo and Joe.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, Joe, yes. All right. Well, we are back. Thanks for sticking around. It's the Rebecca Juro Show. I've been talking a lot about End It Tonight, and obviously there's good reason. Monday, we see if this bill has any legs here. I think they've done as good a job. And again, I'm giving credit to Harry Reid because I think it's due. I think they've done as much as they can do. I mean, I'm hoping. Right now, they're still saying it's only 50. They've only confirmed 59 votes. And that's where it gets me nervous, you know. Now, on the other side of this, of the side where maybe something gives you hope, Lisa Keene is reporting that there's a concerted effort underway to get more Republicans behind Enda. I'll read a little bit of what she wrote here. There's some good stuff in here. Now that Congress has a little breathing room to discuss legislation beyond the budget, groups hope to advance bills to help their cause. They're pushing hard to move their bills to the floor. Yeah, because, you know, the House has such a great track record. But all right. For the LGBT community, the bill's best position for action are Bill to Prevent Bullying in Schools and the longstanding Employment Non-Discrimination Act. Both have reported at a committee, but all eyes are on ENDA. And for the first time ever, there's strong, visible support by Republicans to get Republicans on board with ENDA. The reason can be seen in the numbers. And this is interesting stuff. I don't think we've heard a lot of this before, or at least not laid out in quite this way. Check this out. In the House, Republicans dominate 231 to 200. There are six vacancies. Any bill needs 216 votes to pass. The number of co-sponsors of ENDA in the House stands at 185. That's 31 short of the bare minimum needed to pass. Of those 185 co-sponsors, only four are Republicans. Of the 245 members who haven't co-sponsored ENDA, 227 are Republicans. Even if all 18 Democrats who have not yet co-sponsored the bill did so, and even if every vacancy is filled by a new co-sponsor, the support would still fall short by seven votes that could only come from Republicans. In the Senate, while Democrats with independents, that's Bernie Sanders, and I think there's one other independent, I forget which one. Angus King from Maine, dominate 55 to 45. They don't have already 60 votes to win a procedural vote. That's the cloture vote necessary to force a vote on the bill itself. In other words, to break a filibuster. The Senate ENDA has 54 co-sponsors, and only two of those are Republicans. Actually, it's now 55 because Cory Booker is in there, was sworn in this morning, so it's now 55. To get to 60 votes, the bill still was by six more votes from among three Democrats and 43 Republicans. We're being told by Harry Reid that he's got those votes. But that gets it. Let's say that he's right. Let's say that he's right. That gets it through the Senate. Then we got to go over to the House. Now, the article continues. I'll read a little bit more here. Log cabin Republicans have been pointing out for years that the LGBT community must focus on garnering Republican support in Congress, but that group has never had the financial resources to make a significant dent itself in the past. The group's website lists only 4 senators and 3 House members as allies, and only 2 of the senators and 3 of the House members are ENDA co-sponsors. Well, part of that is because they don't really focus on ENDA. They don't really block out, and Republicans have never been a big deal about ENDA. They've always been marriage, marriage, marriage. In fact, if I remember correctly, many years ago, they were actively promoting an ENDA that excluded trans people. So, you know, their credibility is suspect at best, honestly. The Washington Post, continuing on here, the Washington Post reported October 21st that a pro-gay Republican group called American Unity Fund has hired 2 former Republican members of Congress to lobby for ENDA, even though both oppose allowing same-sex couples to marry. The AUF hired former Representative Tom Reynolds and former Senator Norm Coleman. Oh, yeah, great choices. To secure Republicans' co-sponsors for ENDA. Reynolds, who is also a former chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, voted against ENDA in 2007. So you get a guy who voted against the bill in 2007 to say, oh, well, you should vote for it now. Well, actually, considering the way Republicans flip-flop on their on the bills that they themselves write, I guess it probably makes some perverse sorts of sense in some insider DC way that normal people can't possibly understand. There's a quote from Jeff Cook McCormick, a senior advisor to this organization. Republicans have a diverse range of opinions on marriage equality, while at the same time there is a clear and decisive majority who are in support of ENDA. Really? So where are these people? Where have they been? I mean, I hope this guy is right, but I mean, I'm not seeing it. I'm really not. I would like to see it. I'm hopeful. But I wonder where these guys are getting their information from, because this is just, you know. Now, apparently, AUF is also a part of Americans for Workplace Opportunities, a campaign organized by a steering committee of 11 organizations, which includes the Human Rights Campaign, National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, the ACLU, the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights, another organization that advocated throwing trans people under the bus in 2007, let's not forget, okay, let's just not forget that. So along with the Human Rights Campaign, that makes at least 2 organizations that advocated throwing the little guy under the bus to pander to the wealthy and powerful. So, you know, you'll forgive me if I have a little skepticism about such organizations. The AUF has credibility with Republicans. Its president, Margaret Hoover, was an associate director of intergovernmental affairs in the administration of George W. Bush. Serves on the advisory council of G.O. Proud. Oh, yeah, there's an impressive title for you. I mean, have you heard some of those wackadoodles at G.O. Proud? I mean, they're almost as bad as, like, the Louie Gohmert crowd. I mean, give me a fucking break. Okay, this is supposed to be credible? I guess, well, maybe if Republicans find her credible, I suppose. She's also provided, as unsurprisingly, commentary to Fox News and the Wall Street Journal. Chief funder is Republican supporter Paul Singer, whose son is gay. Sure. Kevin Nix, spokesperson for HRC, said HRC, AUF, and the other groups in the AWO are taking a campaign approach to ENDA, using fieldwork in a select number of states, polling and research with a budget of $2.5 million. Of course, they don't explain, what the fuck does that mean? I mean, this is a federal bill. States are not voting on this. What the fuck does that mean? They're taking a campaign approach. What does that... I mean, I would love to know if somebody explained that to me. All right. Nick said the AWO coalition expects ENDA vote in the Senate will be in weeks, not months. Okay. Cautiously optimistic, of course they are. It will make it out of the Senate, and it will improve our prospects in the House. but Nix acknowledged the House is an uphill climb. Why don't they just say the truth? There's no fucking way it's getting into the House unless somebody puts a bullet into Boehner's brain and replaces him with Pelosi. I mean, will you guys climb out of your fucking D.C. anthills and start talking reality to these people? I mean, and then they wonder why none of us trust these people, because they talk bullshit. An uphill climb. Well, we don't want to say it's not possible. You know, it's like, I mean, you know, it's like saying, you know, the fact that I might suddenly levitate out of my seat right now is an uphill climb. Yeah, that's impossible too. You know, I wish these people would stop talking this DC political doublespeak and start talking like the rest of us human beings outside of the Beltway. Now, continuing on with the article, there are other groups working to get Republican support on ENDA, Project Right Side. I don't know what this is. Oh, started by Ken Melman, Captain Closet, who came out as gay a few years after stepping down as national Republican chairman and being as virulently anti-gay as anybody during those years. So, you know, another flip-flopping turncoat. To the community, a guy who was perfectly happy to piss all over his own community for political purposes. Yeah, what a stellar individual, huh? I mean, really, where do they get these fucking people? I mean, don't they have anybody decent? Ken Melman? I mean, are you fucking shitting me?
They only hire hypocrites. Seriously.
I mean, really? I mean, it seems like, you know, it seems like these guys are going to the website of like hypocritesrus.com or something.
There's a 10-step program for that.
I guess so. Let's see. Lock Cabin Republicans are not on the AWO steering committee. Well, that at least shows good common sense. What the fuck do you need those people for? He says, but the executive director, Gregory Angelo, said his group is working with AWO, doing call-ins, polling, lobby days, and personal meetings with member of Congress and their staff. And he's working closely with Kristen Burrell, a former log cabin official who's working for another pro-ENDA group, the Freedom to Work, which is not the Freedom to Work, which is obviously Lisa Keene got that wrong, founded by former Hill legal counsel Tico Almeida, who we've had on the show. Angela said he and Burrell met October 22nd with representatives of right-wing Senator Ted Cruz. We're not working on getting additional co-sponsors, said Angelo, just trying to make sure there are the votes to pass it. Angelo said he got the meeting with Cruz's staff because Log Cabin shares some positions with Cruz, including opposition to the Affordable Care Act. Yeah. Well, we think you should get a job, but, you know, you get sick? Fuck you. You're on your own. Yeah. That's the organization that they're touting here. We should get married, and, well, yeah, you should probably be able to get a job. But if you get sick, fuck you. Go to the emergency room. Who gives a shit if you can get hormones? Who gives a fuck if you can get proper care and you're LGBT and your local Christian hospital kicks you to the curb? Because, of course, you know, if they pass ENDA, they'll have that nice wide religious exemption, which will allow them to, you know, pretty much do whatever they want. And they say, still, isn't Cruz a bit of a stretch? And Gregory Angelo replies, my approach is to leave no stone unturned. If there is a Republican's office that is interested in meeting with us on ENDA, on marriage equality, on Obamacare repeal, whatever, we're not going to turn them down. On Obamacare repeal. Yeah, because that's really a going effort, right? See, that's the problem, is these people, they talk like this, and it's like, you know, they make it like our issues are like this stupidity, repealing Obamacare. Hello, newsflash, it's law. Get the fuck over it. I mean, seriously, the Affordable Care Act is the law of the land. It will continue to be the law of the land, and there isn't a Republican out there with the power to stop it. Get over yourselves. Stop lying. Stop living in fantasy land and join the rest of us in the 21st century. Fuck. I mean, and then they wonder why nobody trusts these people. I mean, look at who you're working with. You're working with fucking wackadoodles who think they've still got a shot at repealing Obamacare. This is who you're working with? Are you serious? Give me a fucking break. I mean, you know, just, I mean, oh, well, we're going to go to Ted Cruz. Yeah, because Ted Cruz is a likely end of vote, right? I mean, what planet are these people living on?
I want the drugs that they're on in Congress.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, because yes. They must be damn good. Yes. Anybody who thinks that Ted Cruz is a reasonable hope for a vote on ENDA. I mean, you know, I would love to see them prove me wrong and say, hey, look, Ted Cruz voted for ENDA. You know. You know, I don't think that's rational. I mean, seriously, I mean, I'm not approaching this from a point of view of saying I don't think that's likely because politics, blah, blah, blah. I don't think that's a rational thing. Okay, you have seen what this man stands for. You have witnessed it. You have seen it on the news. And knowing all that, you still think that you got a shot at convincing him to support a bill like ENDA? I mean, you know, I'll tell you, it's so frustrating. I mean, I'll tell you, I had the opportunity back when I was at Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Well, I'm losing my mind here. At Netroots Nation. I got a chance to speak to Senator Jeff Merkley for a couple of minutes, and he was very gracious, very good, very nice man. I asked him about ENDA, and he seemed to believe. He's like, you know, well, I'm very enthusiastic. I believe it's going to pass. And then I asked him if he thought it had a shot in the House. He's like, I think the momentum will carry over. And I'm like, I, you know, you don't want to be rude. You want a challenge, but you don't want to be rude. But I have to admit, as Senator Merkley was saying those words into my iPad, as I was standing there, and bear in mind, I only had like a minute or two with him, I'm thinking to myself, are you kidding me? Really? Are you seriously believe that there's a real shot in the House? I don't see it. It's like it more and more, over and over and over and over, you see the same thing, where everybody outside the Beltway sees things in a certain way, and everybody else inside the Beltway is like, has a completely different perspective on the reality of these things, how they are going to play out. You know, it's like you wonder, it's like, do you cross the Beltway? Do you like go into like an alternate dimension or something? You know, because it doesn't make any sense. What they are saying inside the Beltway does not jibe with what is actually happening on the ground outside the Beltway. And even within their own field. I mean, when a senator tells me, oh, I think there's a good shot to get this passed through the House, my obvious question is a simple one. Why? Show me the evidence. Show me, show everyone why you believe that this is for real, that you have a serious chance of getting this bill passed with the current leadership in the House. Because I don't think they really believe that. I think they're just saying it because I think they have to. And that's one of the reasons why I have trouble trusting these people. Because if you really want to impress me, tell us the truth. Well, you know what? I don't think there's any shot in the House right now. Tell us that. Tell us why. But don't just make shit up. Don't tell us, okay, like when Jay Carney comes out and says that President Obama believes that it's going to pass the House, that Enda will pass the House, that he somehow believes that John Boehner is going to magically do a 180 on pretty much anything that he's said over the last 2 years and bring this up for a vote. I want to know what brings President Obama to that conclusion. But when you throw something out like that, and then when you're questioned on it, you refuse to give your rationale, well, you know, I use the real world test. If I would call that bullshit, if it was somebody sitting across the kitchen table from me, I'm going to call it bullshit when somebody's standing at the press secretary's podium, too. Okay? Because that's what it is. It's bullshit. It's lies. It's insults to our intelligence. And unless and until the White House starts talking truth and not politics and political platitudes that have no meaning, that we have learned are garbage because we've seen what happens after 5 years, I mean, again, comes back to the same thing. You wonder why nobody trusts you. This is why. Because you spew bullshit. And you're not even slick about it. You don't even back it up. You just say, you know, we here at the White House believe in magical thinking on LGBT workplace rights. And then you wonder why nobody takes you seriously on the issue. How about you take us seriously, President Obama, Secretary Carney? How about you treat us like we're adults who read the newspaper, who surf the internet, who watch television and watch the news? How about you stop treating us like it's 1985 and nobody has the internet anymore? I mean, really. This is the part that inspires distrust for me. Because if I can't believe even the most basic things that you tell me, why will I believe you on anything else? I mean, really, why? Why would I? Would you believe this bullshit if it came to you from a friend? Or from some guy sitting next to you at a bar? Or from your uncle? And if you wouldn't, why is it any more credible coming from Jay Carney or Barack Obama or Nancy Pelosi or Harry Reid? I think we have to start applying the real world test here. If it's bullshit in the real world, it's bullshit in Washington. And I think we have to start calling that out. And I don't care who it is, whether it's some low-level member of Congress or the president. I don't care who it is. But when you say things that are provably bullshit, you deserve to be called out on it. You do. And if you don't like being called out on stuff that is provably bullshit, well, there's an easy answer to that. There's an easy solution. Stop spewing it. Tell us the truth. Don't tell us what you think we want to hear. Tell us what we need to hear. Tell us the truth. Stop spewing political claptrap that nobody believes and talk turkey on our civil rights, goddammit. And yeah, I'm still angry because I'm hearing people hem and haw, and well, we're not sure, maybe this, we don't know. It's the same kind of bullshit we were hearing 5 years ago. It's the same kind of bullshit we were hearing 3 years ago. It's the same kind of bullshit we were hearing 7 years ago. It's the same kind of bullshit we were hearing 17 years ago. And I'm sorry. But if you want credibility from this reporter, you're going to have to do something to earn it. Because you don't deserve to be taken at face value. You don't deserve the benefit of the doubt. Because we gave you the benefit of the doubt in 2009. When you came to us. When you came to us in 2008 and said, get us 15 more members of the House, we'll get ENDA passed. When President Obama said he will use the weight of his administration to see ENDA passed into law. And then we got to see what happened. Where I come from, that's called bullshit. Yeah, I mean, because I'm from Jersey. Jersey, we call bullshit, bullshit. We don't make politically tested, we don't use politically tested phrases. We talk like people here. We don't worry about, you know, we're not so far to the left of we're talking about, you know, organic free-range chickens like they do in California. But we're not afraid to call bullshit, bullshit. And that's what we're getting from Obama and Harry Reid. Well, who knows? Let's see. Let's see if Harry Reid is still spewing bullshit.
I think Chris Christie has, you know, he's been spotted eating a boxcar of free-range chickens. Something like that. And kind of talking Jersey talk all the time.
Yeah. Now, there's one more thing, and this is going to – we're almost out of time here. Yeah. But I wanted to hit this one thing. I didn't even send this to you, Mike. I ran across this earlier, and I want to preface this by saying I have no idea if this is a real story or if this is a bullshit story, if this is somehow a joke. I honestly do not know. It's hard to tell. So I'm just going to read you this thing, and I'll let you guys be the judge. If you figure out if this is real or not, you let me know. This comes from New York. Ready for this? Sesame Street's Big Bird comes out as transgender. No, I'm not shitting you.
What?
New York. The last few years have seen more than a few eye-catching character reinventions on a longtime award-winning show, Sesame Street. The changes are not surprising that it's given on PBS, a network committing to advancing progressive values while instilling a strong sense of community among its viewers. Take, for instance, Cookie Monster's recent substitution of an all-cookie diet to a balanced one, with vegetables as a main focus. For those of you who may not be familiar with the strangely endearing shaggy blue puppet, Cookie Monster, as his name illustrates, has always been quite the lovers of all things cookie. But in 2005, writers decided that it was time for the character to promote healthier eating habits in a country ravaged by hungry jowls of obesity. In a similar vein, the Sesame Street franchise has introduced us to Cammy, an HIV-positive character, a much older Elmo grappling with issues of puberty and masturbation, as well as Oscar the Grouch's recent bouts with the harsh realities of homelessness and schizophrenia.
What?
Yeah, I mean, this is
a parody article.
You understand why I have trouble believing this is real. All of these changes seem to be part and parcel of the show's evolution and have helped connect viewers to a much more pertinent reflection of the world that they live in. And it goes on. I mean, I don't know if we have enough time for this, but it goes on. It says, it's pivotal that our shows give an adequate representation of the actual society that we're living in, observed PBS correspondent Holman Akwame. Change is good. These changes, however, were only the tip of the iceberg. Just last week, the iconic, fun-loving Big Bird, who has been undergoing some troubling identity issues this season, came out as transgender and will be continuing the show as a female character. The larger-than-life, seemingly asexual bird is helping ease viewers into her new lifestyle and educating children as to the importance of accepting who they are. The groundbreaking episode, which urged viewers to practice patience, love, and support for all individuals, reached a whopping 5.5 million viewers according to Nielsen ratings, a number rivaled only by the Ken Burns documentary, The National Parks, America's Best Idea, back in 2011. We only got a minute left, so I'm not going to continue this. But I mean, it reads so real. I really I don't know. I would love to know if this is real. If anybody knows if this is real, seriously, if you have small kids that watch Sesame Street, you watch this, get in touch with me. I would love to know if this is for real or if this is bullshit. Anyway, okay, looks like we are out of time. Where does it go? I swear to God. So by next week, we will know if we have a Senate vote on ENDA in the House. We will be talking about that. We've got plenty more. Hopefully, we will have a guest. We were supposed to have a guest tonight, but unfortunately, that didn't work out. I'll be working on that over the week. Next week, and I want to remind everybody, we will be going to a bi-weekly schedule after next week's show. We were going to be doing bi-weekly over the holidays because Mr. Mike has some stuff going on. I will give you more details about that next week. In the meantime, thanks everybody. Have a good night, and we'll catch you next time.
Show the people!